The BBC and MI5, what have they got in common? Both classic British institutions, check. Both run and controlled by the establishment, check. Both known for operating in the shadows while claiming to serve the public, also check. But there's one more connection, one that changes everything we know about how truth and power operate within one of the most influential institutions in the world. And it starts with a book you've probably heard of. In George Orwell's 1984, there's a massive government building called the Ministry of Truth. This is where they rewrite history, where facts get erased and replaced, where war is peace and truth doesn't exist anymore. Orwell based it on a real place, his workplace during World War II, where he spent years creating propaganda broadcasts. We made a video about how 1984 was a warning about the future. It's a cautionary tale about what totalitarianism could become. But recent events have shown me that Orwell might not have been warning us about the future at all. A man just stood before his staff to resign. His organization had been caught red-handed manipulating reality. It was the last incident in a conveyor belt of controversies that have been rolling off their production line for decades. And in his resignation speech, he said something that sounded like it came straight out of 1984. Quote, "This narrative will not just be given by our enemies, it's our narrative. Not the narrative, not the truth, their story. Stories designed to sway the public consciousness, your consciousness to meet their objectives." His name is Tim Davey, and that institution is the BBC. And the building Orwell based the Ministry of Truth on is the Broadcasting House, their HQ. So what exactly did Orwell witness there that gave him his ideas? And why does it reveal so much about what's going on in the Ministry of Truth, I mean the BBC? It's just those two words, our narrative, that revealed everything. But first, you need to see what forced Davey out. One week before the 2024 US election, the BBC's flagship investigative documentary Panorama aired footage of Trump's January 6th speech. In their edits, he appears to say this.
"We're gonna walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not gonna have a country anymore."
It looks damning, like he's directly calling for violence at the Capitol. Except those sentences were spaced 54 minutes apart in the actual speech. The BBC spliced them together, manufacturing a quote that never existed. Then, as many of you probably know, someone inside the BBC's own editorial standards team noticed it, and added this to an internal memo. When that leaked in early November 2024, everything blew up in their face. The story took the top slot in the 6 o'clock news. Trump's been threatening a billion-dollar lawsuit, and Davey finally resigned along with the head of news.
For Tim Davey, I think this in many ways has been a long time coming. He's had an incredibly difficult year where he has managed to sort of dodge his way out of quite a few sort of issues that have come to light.
We're used to all of this excessive misinformation, right? But come on, this is the BBC, the world's most trusted broadcaster, an institution that has been waging war on exactly this kind of thing. They ran a fact-checking team called BBC Verify, where they quote, "fact-check information, verify video, counter disinformation, and analyze data to separate fact from fake, and to bring clarity on complex issues." Check out how they market it.
"We'll be watching. We'll be ready. Because it's the pursuit of truth that gives us our calling. The fight for truth is on."
That is the context for the BBC's insanely ironic error. And I've got to say, it's really disappointing. Obviously, it's part of being British to be tuned in to the BBC. You literally grew up watching the BBC on the kids' TV channels called CBeebies and CBBC. If you're English, this is a constant rotation that you'll be familiar with. It's breakfast news first thing, then at lunch, then at 6 o'clock. It's TV shows like Pointless, documentaries by David Attenborough, and prime dramas like Doctor Who. And if you walk into any British household around 6 o'clock, you can guarantee the BBC News will be on. And there's just something still quintessentially British about the delivery of it too, like we heard with the announcement of the Queen's death.
"A few moments ago, Buckingham Palace announced the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II.
It's the kind you'd expect if nuclear war broke out and we're about to be vaporized or something. It's kind of strangely comforting. And this is exactly the kind of broadcasting that once earned the BBC its incredible reputation, which honestly makes all the manipulation tactics they've been using all along hit even harder, because they wormed their way into our hearts and minds ever since we were born in England. It doesn't even matter if you sympathize with Trump or not. Most would agree that the BBC, an institution that built its reputation on trust, shouldn't go around manipulating footage in a truth-seeking documentary. But this isn't really about one politician or one scandal or just one side of politics. It's no open and shut case of political bias, and that's what makes this so deeply intriguing. But before we continue, I want to show you something that's really useful for making sense of stories like this one. To avoid bias like the BBC, go to ground.news/moon to get 40% off unlimited access this month. Because Ground News takes news from over 50,000 sources around the world every single day, and helps you see the full picture. Because here's the problem, most of us only see what our feeds or favorite outlets decide to show us. We think we're informed, but we're often just reading a narrow slice of reality, and Ground News fixes that. For example, take a look at this article of the BBC chair apologizing for the Trump documentary edits. On Ground News, I can instantly see the coverage details. There are 97 articles across outlets, with a bias breakdown showing 38% left-leaning sources, 32% center, and 30% right-leaning sources. From there, I can then click compare headlines to read every article from its original source, all side by side, and see how the language changes depending on bias. Here's another one, the BBC's internal review of its climate coverage. Ground News then shows 5 sources covering this one, all rated right-leaning in this sample. And that tells you instantly which side is paying attention and which isn't. And this is also where the blind spot feed comes in, as it surfaces around 20 stories per day that one side of the political spectrum barely covers, so you're never trapped inside someone else's echo chamber. Personally, I really love their My News Bias dashboard, as it helps you understand your own reading habits so you know whether you're missing perspectives. So if you actually want to see through the bias instead of just arguing about it, Ground News is the best tool I've found. So go to ground.news/moon to get 40% off unlimited access this month. Because here's where the plot begins to thicken. When you look at how the BBC responded to this one incident, something just felt off. When the footage leaked, they had 3 clear options. Option 1, they could launch a real investigation. Find out how deep this manipulation goes. Bring in external oversight. Show accountability to the world that relies on them for truth and objectivity. That's 500 million people at least around the world. Option 2, they could deny everything. Stonewall like they've done countless times before, weather the storm, stick other news on rotation, and wait for everyone to move on. Option 3. Or they could do the classic move, issue a limited apology, blame it on editorial mistakes, and pretend they're making progress behind the scenes. The BBC chose none of these options. Sure, their 2 highest profile figures resigned, but Davey was insistent that the BBC has no institutional bias whatsoever. While mistakes have been made, he said, I want to be absolutely clear. Recent allegations that BBC News is institutionally biased are wrong. He quit, but it was just a self-sacrifice, rather than anything introspective about the BBC's conduct. Pretty much just some vague hand-waving about mistakes, minimizing the deeper existential questions everyone has about the corporation. And you have to wonder where this protective instinct even comes from. The blatant self-sacrifice, the well-drilled strategy of sweeping everything under the carpet and moving on in the blink of an eye. It's a classic BBC-style limited hangout. When I started digging into this, I found something buried in newspaper archives from the 1980s, and that started to answer these questions, which drew me deeper into Orwell's world and what inspired him to write 1984 in the BBC's image. The year is, coincidentally, 1985, and whistleblowers from within the corporation approached a newspaper called The Observer. They'd watched something concerning happen over and over again and kept their heads down, but finally decided someone outside needed to know. They brought cases, names, decades worth of evidence pointing to something that had been operating inside Broadcasting House since the 1930s. When the journalists walked in and confronted the BBC's director of personnel with what they had, he wouldn't discuss it, and just said the whole area was confidential. So they published anyway. The shock story revealed MI5, British Intelligence, had been vetting every BBC employee since the 1930s. The BBC denied it outright, calling it a conspiracy theory. But when the evidence proved too solid to dismiss, they changed their story. Fine, yes, there was some limited screening lobbying for sensitive positions, national security reasons, nothing to worry about. That was a lie too. The truth was that MI5 had been vetting every single person who worked at the BBC for decades. There was an office specifically for this, room 105, tucked away on the first floor of the broadcasting house. The door said Special Duties Management. Inside sat a former army intelligence officer whose entire job was liaising with MI5, sending every applicant's name to be run through a database containing 500,000 people flagged as subversives. What does that even mean? Well, communists and political dissidents, obviously, but also activists of all kinds. People who might be less likely to fall in line with the establishment. If MI5 didn't like you, if you had the wrong political views or the wrong friends, or had been to the wrong protests, they'd put a little mark on your personnel file, an upward-facing arrow that looked like a Christmas tree. That was the code. You were blacklisted. You'd never get promoted. The BBC would keep you in place ineffective until you got the message and left. The BBC spent 50 years lying about this. Their official policy, according to leaked internal documents, was to quote, "keep heads down and stonewall all questions." It only fully came to light in 2018 when they finally admitted it had continued until the 90s. Orwell worked in that building from 1941 to 43, right when MI5 was setting up the system, deciding who could tell the news and who couldn't. Did he see it? Is that what he was trying to warn us about? Because the filtering didn't stop in the 90s, it just evolved and became insidiously and quietly preferential. Consider that BBC executives are 5 times more likely to have attended private school than the general public. Most went to Oxford or Cambridge, the exact pipeline that produces MPs, intelligence officers, high-profile business and financial professionals, and high-ranking civil servants. Mark Thompson, the former Director General, said in a confidential meeting in 2012 that he was disturbed by the number of Oxbridge graduates working at the BBC. He went to Oxford himself, saw the problem, admitted it was a problem, and then nothing changed. It actually just got worse. You don't need MI5 writing Christmas trees on files anymore. The system has absorbed those practices and now practically filters itself. You know, this is all about protecting the BBC and the British establishment, because the two are intrinsically linked, and I'll tell you exactly how it works. The corporation operates under something called a Royal Charter, basically the foundational document that gives it independence from politicians while keeping it accountable to the public who fund it. Sounds very grand and British, right? But here's the catch. It expires every decade and needs to be renewed. During charter review, Parliament decides whether the BBC should continue in its current form. In theory, the government could decide not to grant a new charter at all, effectively ending the BBC as a public corporation. So the BBC simply needs to be on the government side at all times. Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher knew this. In the 80s, when she thought that the BBC was biased against her, she used the charter renewal as leverage. She installed her supporters on the BBC board and forced through massive reforms. The BBC survived, but only by transforming itself completely. It's this mechanism that explains why the BBC is so incredibly fickle. They have evolved to turn on whoever opposes the establishment, as the establishment protects them and vice versa. I mean, it's literally in their DNA. John Reith, the guy who founded the BBC, wrote something in his diary back in the 1920s that straight up admits this. He said the government, quote, "knows they can trust us not to be really impartial." Reith saying that from day one, staying on the government's good side was baked into the whole strategy. Think about that, forming the world's most powerful broadcaster, one that supposedly lives and breathes truth, on the premise it doesn't really need to be impartial. Worse, it can be trusted not to be. And this isn't some hypothetical statement written in an old diary. You can see how the BBC repeatedly backed the establishment over and over again. They made a documentary about the ongoing conflict in Northern Ireland, which was tearing the country apart at the time. The government applied pressure. The BBC governors withdrew it before it could air and banned some figures from appearing on the news. The documentary was eventually broadcast, but was censored to keep the government happy. A couple years later, the BBC commissioned 6 investigative films exposing all kinds of government secrets. Covert satellite programs, preparations for nuclear war, incompetent defense contractors. It would have been groundbreaking. The government didn't want the heat from the public, so the BBC just scrapped them. Then, to try to turn people against the protesters in the mining strike, the most violent civil protest in modern British history, they edited images to make it look like the protesters attacked the police, when it was actually the police who charged at them. This served the government when they desperately needed public opinion on their side. There were multiple calls for a proper apology, but the BBC didn't have the backbone to do it. So let's reflect on all of this for a second. This is the world's premier objective news outlet. None of this is even remotely acceptable. If any of that happened in, say, Russia, China, the US, anywhere, they'd call it propaganda. And trust me, we haven't even got to the most shocking example yet. One that shows you exactly what this system does when someone threatens the establishment from within the BBC. In 2003, the UK government was pushing hard for war with Iraq, claiming Saddam Hussein had weapons that could be deployed within 45 minutes. The BBC ran a story saying the government was exaggerating the intelligence. Their source was David Kelly, a weapons expert who'd been to Iraq and knew what he was talking about. The government went berserk, demanding to know who leaked the information, and someone gave up Kelly's name. Suddenly, this quiet scientist was dragged before parliamentary committees. He was then questioned aggressively, and his reputation was torn apart on national television. Friends said he looked terrible, exhausted, stressed beyond anything they'd seen. Days after his brutal questioning, Kelly left his house for a walk. He told his wife he'd be back soon. He never came back. They found him dead the next day. Official verdict, self-inflicted. A quote-unquote textbook case, said the newspapers. Strange thing was, Kelly's fingerprints weren't on the alleged weapon used or the tablet box. A group of doctors later petitioned that the government should reopen the case, claiming that the medical and circumstantial facts didn't add up. Lawyers rejected the appeal. The BBC ultimately blamed itself and apologized to the government for allowing the story to develop. They fell on their own sword, in other words, to protect the interests of the mysterious higher-ups. And this is what the system does. The filtering keeps out people who might challenge authority. The Royal Charter keeps the BBC compliant, and when someone like Kelly slips through anyway, they get destroyed, and the institution protects itself by sacrificing them. Compare that to how they treat their own. Jimmy Savile, decades of abuse, hundreds of victims, but the BBC protected him because he was valuable. Hugh Edwards, the guy to break the news about the Queen's death, kept getting paid after his arrest, with his salary increasing to £475,000, only to then plead guilty to accessing indecent images of children, all with barely a mention. Threaten the establishment, gone. Valuable to the institution, protected as long as possible. This is the machine Orwell saw, not crude propaganda, but something subtler. Building full of people who genuinely believe they're serving the truth. Who've absorbed this top-down worldview so much that anything threatening it feels dangerous, wrong, something that needs correcting. When they edited Trump's speech, they probably thought they were protecting their superior version of the truth. When they come up with biased garbage, when they protected Savile and Edwards, they thought they were protecting something more important. When they threw Kelly under the bus, they thought they were protecting credibility. So it's this culmination of thousands of small choices that just compound over time. Which stories get covered and which don't? Who gets brought on for news? Who gets brought on for interviews and whose perspective never makes it to air? What context gets included and what gets left out? Our narrative, Davies said, and he meant it. Their narrative is the truth, everything else is noise. The Ministry of Truth is always busy in the shadows, shaping reality. See, this is why the BBC will survive this whole blowback from Trump. Institutions like this don't die, they just shamble forward. Increasingly irrelevant, but too embedded and important to disappear. There will be inquiries that just go nowhere, things will get quiet, and they'll just keep on collecting license fees. Yes, in England, they still legally force you to pay to watch the BBC, literally going round people's houses when they don't. But the downfall of these monolithic institutions has left us in a different, messier place with the news. Trust in government, media, academia, medicine, scientific institutions, all collapsing simultaneously. People don't believe their doctors, their teachers, their elected officials, their news sources. Nothing has authority anymore. Your friend got his news from some guy on YouTube, your mum's sharing stuff on Facebook. Nobody agrees what's even true anymore, it's all just fractured, chaotic, and exhausting. This is a society losing its belief in a shared truth. This is what the BBC really gave us, a disturbing society created by corrupted networks and their controlling elites. Orwell sat in that building, He watched how it worked and wrote it all down in the most famous exploration of truth and power ever written. 1984, a story that just keeps telling itself over and over every single day. Ironically, outside Broadcasting House today, you'll find a statue of him watching over the Ministry of Truth. The statue's inscription reads, "If liberty means anything at all, it means the right to tell people what they do not want to hear." A darkly comical reminder standing guard over the place he warned us all about. But if you want to see our deeper 50-minute video on the topic of 1984, check out this video right here, as this will explain everything even more clearly.